When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running live broadcast. Before we start with the lovely Nick from NK Active to my left here, I just need to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Karan's, which is the blackcurrant extract from New Zealand that I have recently been experimenting with. So I found that they've really helped me with my recovery from my latest half marathon. And so me and Karan's, which is a family owned company, we have just teamed up to give you a 40% discount, which you can find top left of the screen just there and in the film description and podcast show notes below. They've just been crowned Sports Nutrition Product Champion at the European Specialist Sports Nutrition Awards 2022. So yeah, I'm very happy for them and excited to bring you this discount with them. So give it a go if you want to get optimal help by supporting blood flow, immunity, joint and muscle function, and reducing stress on the body. So there you go, that's Karan's for you there. And now I will just introduce Nick. He is just sitting here very patiently. He's a podiatrist from NK Active, and we've done a couple of broadcasts before. And today we're going to be talking about our top five tips for over 40s runners, because in February, I'm turning 40. So very selfishly, I want all of Nick's advice on what I should do, because recently I've been feeling really, really exhausted. I stopped taking these for 2 weeks, and I'd just become really exhausted. So I started taking them again and doing various other things. And I just, now I'm back to normal me. So now I'm scared to not take them. But I'm sure there's lots of other things I can be doing as well. So that's why I need Nick to tell me what to do. So first of all, Nick, I thought we should just start with how age affects our running, first of all.
Well, we can even make it more simpler than that. We can talk about how does age affect the human body. And it's all good news up to the age of 30. Oh,
damn it.
And then from 30 onwards, it's all downhill from there, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
And then you reach 60, and then it goes even quicker.
Oh, no.
And then the reason I'm speaking about that is that it's what you call sarcopenia. So sarcopenia is a proper medical term for muscle wasting. So essentially, all the time up to the age of 30, our body's constantly building muscle on its own, and you haven't got to do much. Hence why when you look at your kids and whatnot and teenagers, they can pretty much do anything they want and they hardly ever get any injuries. And then as we get older, more injuries tend to creep in. The good news is there are things can do to slow that process down.
Phew.
And there was a it's not all doom and gloom. And there was a one beautiful study out there that did look at a 40-year-old male runner, a 72, I think it was, year old male runner, and then like a 74-year-old male who sat around and done nothing. And all these men physically to look at were the same size. And they took an MRI scan, so stuck them in the big magnet tube, as it were, and took an MRI scan of their thighs. And then what they done is they took a cross section. So you basically think if you just basically slice the top of your thigh open, have a look down, and what did they see? And they basically found they couldn't tell the difference between the 40-year-old runner and the 72-year-old runner. However, the 76-year-old who sat around and done nothing, all the muscle had wasted away and turned into fat.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it is that really, that the old analogy of use it or lose it is so, so true. And then if we then even talk about, again, runners and the older generation, the we're talking over 40s now, so you're talking 60s plus. There was a study out of New Zealand that actually showed that by lifting weights and being active on a regular basis reversed the osteoporosis process. So it is one of those things that there are things that you can do. And then if you talk about running specifically 40 over 40s, there was one paper that showed you that runners who run half marathon distance or more, unless they do anything about it, lose about 5% of muscle strength every year.
Oh, God.
and unfortunately, running on its own isn't enough to replace that muscle strength. Running is fabulous. It's great for your mental health. It's great for fitness. There's so, so many positives about running. I'm a massive advocate of it. But if we want to purely look at improving strength, running isn't the right activity to do that.
And strength is what we need to sort of strength, halt, so my, slow down the aging process and the effects
correct.
Of that.
So tip number one, as it were, is please don't neglect your strength training. It is so, so important to the point that WHO, the World Health Organization, have changed their stance on what is recognized. So you used to have your 30 minutes a day of cardiovascular thing work. They've now added in that people, especially as we get older, should be doing a minimum of 3 strength sessions a week. So, wow. so that's now like a worldwide recommendation. And it is one of these things that if you take one thing away from today, that is the biggest tip by a country mile. And you haven't got to do lots, about 18 minutes, 3 times a week of doing proper strengthening work. And then, so what do we mean by the strengthening work? For me, strengthening work should be difficult. It hasn't got to be done in the gym. It can be done at home. All it has to be hard work. So you maybe want to be able to do an exercise 6 to 8 times, but by the time you finish that last repetition, you're like, "Oh, that's a little hard. That's difficult. That's hard work." If you can sit there and do the exercise 30, 40 times, that's good, but you're not going to be increasing your strength.
Yeah, you're not putting any pressure on your muscles to kind of go, "Oh, we need to be stronger here. Let's build some more muscle fibers."
Yeah, exactly. And if you can do that, you can significantly slow down that your effect as you get older. And the beauty is, if you're over 40 now and you've never done any strength work, it's never too late to start. It's not as if you can turn and say, "Right, I didn't do it on a 30, so I've missed the boat." No, it doesn't matter. The body will respond to it whenever you start doing it. You can start doing it in your 60s and your 70s, and your body will still have a positive response to that.
Fantastic. So you can start any time. So it doesn't matter if you haven't missed the boat ever. You've never missed that boat. No. So from your experience as a podiatrist at NK Active, which I should mention, you do Zoom consultations as well. You don't have to be down south where you are. What are the most common like age-related running complaints that you see from people?
The big one is osteoarthritis, I would say. So whether that be osteoarthritis in the foot, whether that be osteoarthritis in the knee, in the people over 40, I'd say is going to be the biggest complaint. And again, there's so much, I'm going to be blunt, there's so much rubbish out there about osteoarthritis and sports. Like, there are people that are still out there who are still saying, "Running's bad, it will give you arthritis in your knees." Well, we actually know, actually, running is most probably protective of getting arthritis in your knees. And we know that actually, if you've got arthritis, it's more important than ever to actually keep moving and keep doing things. So we're on a bit of a crusade to try and sort of demedicalize osteoarthritis, because once we all get to a certain age, the majority of the population have some form of it. So actually, once we get to a certain age, it's most probably more normal to have it than not to have it. So why do we need to medicalize it and attach all this fear and anxiety to it when we can say, actually, yeah, I've got osteoarthritis. So what? There are things I can do. Yes, it may ache when I go for a run. That doesn't mean I'm doing any damage. You're better off just going out for the run and getting things moving. That old cheesy term of motion is lotion.
Yeah. It is, actually. It is. And what ages are these people that are complaining of osteoarthritis? Because I think of that as like a really old person's thing.
Now, I got 40 onwards.
40 onwards.
If you're younger and you've got osteoarthritis, it normally means you've had some sort of trauma. So if you've broken a bone, or so if you broke your ankle in the past, mm-hmm. you're already at much higher risk of developing arthritis later on in life. Okay. If there's a strong family history of it, then again, you're more than likely. And if you take hips, for example, if you were born with hip dysplasia, there's a much higher chance you're going to get arthritis in your hips much, much earlier. And there's actually a lot of work being done within managing knee injuries. So you may have come to running later on in your life. You may have played football or rugby or something, or contact sport previously, or done a lot of skiing and ruptured your ACL. We know there's a high prevalence of ACL ruptures and developing osteoarthritis. But actually, we're now realizing there's a lot of these ACL injuries. If we manage them better, we can reduce the risk of someone developing arthritis later on in life. So there's been a big consensus statement out there looking at this by saying, actually, we're going to hold our hands up. We haven't been the best at managing ACL injuries in the past. We need to do better for people. But that's just because science has evolved. We know more about it.
Yeah.
It's the world I work in. It's sort of, I was looking through some notes about from 10 years ago, and I was like, wow, was I really saying that to patients 10 years ago? Because science just evolves. It just moves on. So things like, we now can, you can detect osteoarthritis on MRI scan before it shows up on X-ray.
Oh, wow. Well, that's cool.
Not that I'm not saying everyone needs an MRI scan, because the system just couldn't cope with that and they don't need it. But you can start detecting these joint changes much earlier. So if we detect those,
how would someone know? Oh, I think I might have osteoarthritis. I must go and get it checked out. Or is it?
If you're doing it super early, you don't know. These are the joint changes happening before symptoms even start. This is how medicine has evolved, mm-hmm. that we can start picking up things before they're going to cause a problem.
Oh wow.
The biggest thing of osteoarthritis in general is that stiffness in the morning.
Okay.
Or after a period of rest, you may start noticing a few extra lumps and bumps appear. So within your foot, for example, if you've got arthritis in the middle of the foot, you may look down on your foot and say, actually, there's a bit of a solid lump here that wasn't there a couple of years ago. That's most probably just early arthritic changes.
Oh no. My husband has got one on his finger, a lump here, and then he's just discovered one on his toe as well. And I told him to go and get it checked out. But it sounds like it might be that, mightn't it? It could well be.
It's harder than the knee. So the knee's a much bigger joint. So you can't, if you're getting big external lumps visible on the knee, that means your arthritis is severely advanced.
It's in his toe and on his finger.
Yeah. Whereas on the toe, on the top of the toe, you can often see this, what we call osteophyte, this extra bit's a lump appearing. And you'll wiggle the toe and the toe will be stiff. It won't move as much as...
As
normal.
Well, these lumps, he says, are painful. Like, he presses them and they're not painful, but if he just brushes over the top of them, they're really painful. So I don't know what he's got. I've told him to go and book him with the doctor.
Indeed.
And so as well as osteoarthritis, do we get more injuries as we get older, and is it significant once we reach 40?
I wouldn't say the injury rate goes up. Most probably what happens is the length of time recovery lengthens. So it takes you longer to recover from an injury. And actually in runners, if you're an experienced runner, be running all your life, actually the more experienced you are, the less likely you are to get an injury, because you've learned over the years what your body can and can't do.
Yeah.
So you listen to your body, and the majority of running related injuries is what we call a training error, i.e. you've done something too much too soon, you've increased your pace, you've added too many hill reps in, you've gone from doing loads of road running to then doing lots of off-road. They're the injuries. And as we get a little bit older and wiser, we tend to know what our bodies can and can't cope with.
Yeah. So then you get less injuries because of that.
Yes.
And particularly, I don't know if it's me just like having a toddler now, and but I seem to be getting more sleep nowadays. But do we just have to put up with having less energy as we get older?
No, not really. It's one of those things that if you keep active and you keep doing things, then the body will keep on doing it. So the thing is that we got this culture of, oh, do you know what? I'm getting on a bit now. I'm getting older.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do as much.
Yeah.
That's the bit that's causing this energy, not the aging process.
That's what I was hoping, but surely there is a time when you have to admit to yourself, I can't do what I used to do in my 30s. Because I feel like I'm sort of, do I just keep bashing myself, like trying to do the same? Or do I have to give myself a little bit of wiggle room for the fact that I'm getting older?
So it's more about training smarter. So it's sitting back, reflecting, looking at your training regime, looking at, okay, what's your diet like? What's your sleep like? What's your strength training doing? Am I getting adequate a number of rest days? We all know as runners that actually sometimes to become quicker at running, we've actually got to run slightly less. Because
Or slower. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. You look at all the elite athletes when they'll go out and they'll do super slow runs, and it can be difficult. I'm an ex-sprinter, so the thought of me doing a slow really, really difficult, but actually doing those super slow, long, steady runs really helps just build up those foundations for you. So it's one of those things I think we just need a little bit smarter with the time that we have available to do things.
Yeah, and definitely more strength training. I'm definitely doing that. I'm just panicking a little bit because I've planned a year of ultra running in 2023. So I've got two 50Ks in April and May, and then I would like to do like a 50 miler in like say July or something, and then possibly I want to do something quite big on multi-day in September, and then I wanted to do a 100 miler by the end of the year, but I don't know, that's just way too much stuff. And I am
when's your first one planned?
April. But I am having a chat with a coach as well, Tim Pigott, who's also been on this channel quite a lot, and I'm also going to have a nutrition session with Renee McGregor as well, so that I just like dial everything in. So I thought, right, I'll chat to Nick as well about strength training and over 40s training and see what he has to say too.
So you've still got time to set yourself up perfectly in that.
Yeah.
You got between now and sort of middle of March to really hammer home the strength. So you may back your mileage right off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really building that good set of foundations of strength up. And then when you then get into race season, you drop some of the strength training back to maintain your level of strength. So you're not looking to increase, you're just looking to maintain that set level.
Yeah.
But you've put all the hard work in over the winter.
Yeah.
So this is why I say to all my runners I treat is actually, we're going to use the winter to not worry about what your running speed is or doing stuff like keep mileage ticking over. We're going to use it to build your strength up, so you got a stronger foundations going into race season next year, because you can't, it's difficult to build strength in the middle of race season, because you just can't. If you overcook your strength training, you're going to run with tired legs, you're not giving yourself body adequate rest, you can't do it all.
Yeah. Okay, so lots more strength training. So there are some strength training sessions that I've done on Wild Ginger Running. So I will, at the end of this broadcast, I'll put them in the film description below so people can click on those and follow those.
Yeah.
And David Pollard has a live question, and he says, what exercises can I do to reduce lower back ache after a long run or before a long run? So not specifically age-related, but I'm sure he's of a similar age to me.
So it's doing stuff like that. It's actually doing things like deadlifting, squats, lunges, doing stuff to work on building what we call that proximal chain up. So the gluteals, the hamstrings region. So ironically, one of the best things I've done, because I play a lot of hockey, and so I'm always in that flex position with my back.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting a few back issues. So I went on a machine where I was flat. My back then went down like that, and I had weights, and I was physically pulling myself back up. a lot of stuff like it, we've got to go over the fear that bending something, bending your back is bad. It's actually, if you want to improve your strength in that region, it is good. Hence why deadlifting is so good for runners who are getting lower back issues, because you're targeting that area, you're building up a good foundation around that area.
And can you deadlift with, like, I know you've talked before about having two bags for life filled with like 60 kilograms full of stuff.
Yeah.
Can you deadlift with, like, say if you've got a big backpack and you just put loads of books in, can you use that as a deadlift thing, or does it have to be a bar with like weights on the side? Can just do it like that. And so how would you do it? Just like
of a deadlift,
crouch down and bring it up and put it up over your head or something like that.
So the definition of a deadlift in simple terms is lifting a weight that is not moving off the floor.
So if you think
about it, if you go shopping, you take your bags out of the car, you put them on the floor, you bend down, you pick them, you're technically deadlifting those bags off the floor to walk back inside again.
And if you've got a kid and you're picking them up constantly from the floor, then that's a deadlift as well.
Build it into your life. And the key thing when you think about doing stuff like is consistency. You need to be consistent with what you are doing. And runners know that. They know if you want to run a PB, you need to be consistent with your training, your running training. It's the same principles if you want to get stronger. You can't just do a one-off session, unfortunately. You've got to be consistent. You've got to put the effort in to get that. And you'll reap the rewards. Yeah. Just like if you're consistent with your running, you'll reap rewards by getting a PB, by running even further, by completing multiple events in the year. It's just having the understanding, it's trying to break down these some barriers that strength training, you've all got to look like The Rock, or you've got to all go down the gym constantly. It's not the case.
It sounds like it might be quite beneficial to go to a gym though, because if you don't have, you know, like the right environment at home, you know, like it's difficult, you've got carpets down, you don't have sweat everywhere. It sounds like, you know, if you were heading to the gym like twice a week, then it'd be quite good, because you can, you know, you've got all the weights there and you can up them and up them and up them, whereas at your house you might not have quite the right stuff.
The way I describe it, it is easier to go to the gym.
But it's not necessary.
Not necessary. It all depends on the individual. So if you've got someone that's got a very time-intensive job and they say, right, I'm going to do my strength training at the gym 3 times a week, but they have meetings and they overrun and they got to do school pickup and they only get to the gym once a week, what tends to happen is that, A, they don't get the strength benefits they need because they're only going once a week. And then, two, they tend to get despondent because they're just getting frustrated. They're not getting to the gym.
Yeah.
So those people, I'm like, well, actually plan it to do it at home. Do your 3 sessions at home. And then if you can get to gym once a week, it's almost like a Brucey bonus type thing.
Yeah.
So going to the gym is always going to be easier because you've got stuff. But you need to, basically I say, is think about your week. Think about everything that can go wrong. If everything went wrong in your week, can you still get to the gym on a regular basis? If so, we're going to do it in the gym. If not, we need to have backup plans in place in case you can't get to the gym.
Yeah. Oh, good shout. Good shout. I like that answer. And David Pollard, he's given a little bit of further info here. So he says about 5 years ago, he slipped a disc doing a weighted squat and it's never really recovered. So he can struggle picking things up. And he says he's 58. Sounds like he should see you, Nick.
Yeah, he should see, not me, one of our colleagues, Dave. Because, again, we'll get Dave to chat about it at a different time. We can talk about the myths around slip discs.
Okay.
Because we now know they don't physically slip like we perceive them to. Mm-hmm. And even if there has been an injury, you can still strengthen everything up around there. Mm-hmm. You just got to be sometimes a little creative of what you do. Education of what's acceptable from a pain and discomfort wise and what's a sign that things are overdoing it. But just because he's 58 and he's had that injury, that there's no reason why he can't get back to doing anything that he wants.
That's good news. That's good to hear, isn't it, David? Cool. Okay, so do you think the best course of action would be for him to book in with your team then?
Yeah, it's booking with anyone. He basically needs to go to see someone who understands backs, who understands strength training. And that's what that's Dave, our rehab chap. That's his thing he loves the most, is backs and strength training. Cool. So it's doing something like speaking to someone who has that knowledge around it, who can help build the program for you.
Yeah, because I wouldn't want to suggest anything to David here, because like I don't know the level of the injury and I'm not a professional. So I think it's good, it's important, exactly, David, that you get it checked out first and foremost, and then you follow the plan that they give you. You know, if you know, I know it's expensive getting a physio, but it is a real investment in your body that will stand you in good stead for like 20, 30, hopefully 50 years more.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that then. Cool. So I promised everybody 5 tips in this. We covered one, didn't we? We were like, do more strength work.
Yeah.
There I'll put some links to some strength exercises and moves below. But I just wanted to kind of take us through like the top thing we can do as regards recovering more, like not getting injured, things about speed and things. So I'll talk around.
So my second tip would be is don't neglect your sleep.
Okay. That's so funny, because David also posted saying he gets up at 5 o'clock every morning and he's wondering why he's so tired and has to go to sleep by 8:30 at night. And I didn't even ask you about that. I just said, I think that sounds fine to me, David. I'd be going to bed at 8:30 if I had to get up at 5 every morning.
So the evidence shows us that if you are getting less than 6.5 or 7 hours of good quality sleep every night, you massively increase your risk of getting injured. Mm-hmm. I don't get that. I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and it's one of those things. But if we want to try, then actually sleep is it's not an easy win, because sometimes there are reasons you can't sleep, life gets in the way, but it's something that you can have control over quite easily to do that. And then you won't wake up feeling fresh. So yeah, if you're getting up at 5 o'clock every morning, that's not a bad thing, as long as you then go into bed early, which going to bed by 8:30 is sort of I'd love that at times, but sometimes I'm still on the hockey pitch at 10:30 at night.
Yeah, well, Finley goes to sleep at 7:30, and sometimes I just want to go to bed straight away after. Just that it's all I can do,
yeah,
to do a bit of knitting in front of the telly and then some stretching. Yeah. And then I'm making my mum a scarf for Christmas.
So that would be my second tip. My third tip is making sure you have shoes that fit correctly and are suitable for the job you're going to do. I was having this discussion actually with a patient the other day about, and I'd be interested in your views on the use of Gore-Tex lined trail shoes. Personally, I'm not a big fan of them.
No, I don't use them for actual running, but I have used them in the past for like when I'm filming stuff. So I'm not like being a runner, but I'm moving about in long grass and standing for long periods of time. So
the reason being is
that.
The reason being I'm not a fan of them is they are great if you're not going for anything where any sort of water is going to go above your ankle.
Exactly.
But as soon as they go above your ankle, water gets in the shoe. Because of the Gore-Tex lining, there's no way for that water to get out. So we see a lot of people who get blister issues and macerations around the skin. And whereas actually, if you go for a normal shoe, yes, your foot's going to get wet, but the water can leave.
Yeah, it drains out
straight
again.
Away.
Yeah,
it drains back out again.
That's exactly my thoughts.
But then it's also paying particular attention to the fit of the shoe. So from when our feet stop growing, they still have the potential to change up to 3 sizes throughout adult life.
Wow.
And that can be the aging process. That can be the effects of pregnancy, arthritis, all of these things. So just because you thought you were a size 6 10 years ago doesn't mean you're a size 6 now. Mm-hmm. And so my biggest bit that bit is ignore the size, what it says on the label, and focus on the fit of the shoe. The easiest way to check do your shoes fit is take the shoe lining out of them and literally stand on it. You should have a thumb's width between your big toe and the end of the shoe, and your big toe and little toe shouldn't be hanging over the side of that shoe lining. If it is, then that's an indication these shoes don't fit correctly, and it's maybe looking at different brands. And unfortunately, But running shoes are like, it's like almost like Cinderella. The shoe will select you. You can't select a shoe because different brands fit in different ways. So all your friends may run in a particular shoe and you may want that. But if your foot doesn't fit that style of shoe, that model of shoe, you can't sort of shove a round peg in a square hole type scenario, a square peg in a round hole rather. So that would be sort of tip number three.
Cool. I never thought about that as part of the aging process, that your feet would change. I know mine have after having Finley. I've got a half size bigger. But yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. And then if we then want to start as tip number three. So tip number four is try and just go and enjoy it. So run with friends, and like, especially if you're coming to running as a second sport, if you've done stuff previously or you've done stuff when you're younger, then you took time off around family and then you're getting back into doing it now. Don't pressure races and PBs. If you want to do a race, do it, but go do it with a group of friends or just do it for the enjoyment factor and just try and take those pressures off you. And then once you're comfortable and you found your rhythm, what you like doing, then start trying to push yourself. But don't set yourself sort of goals that are completely unrealistic, because you'll just get despondent about it and stop doing it, really.
And you know, like when you start getting older, like I made some various PBs in like 2014, 2015, that I'm never ever gonna repeat again, partly because I can't be bothered to get as thin again and do as much training again, but also because I'm getting older. So how does one cope with not getting those PBs, and you know, you're never gonna reach that PB again, perhaps?
Well, you can reach that PB again. If you, I think, wasn't it the Australian marathon record got broken yesterday by a woman over the age of 40, I think, wasn't it? I believe. And you can do it if you're prepared to put the work in to achieve it. So it's one of those things that you always set down and think, actually, how much do I actually really want this PB? What am I prepared to sacrifice to get this PB? If you're part donuts on the weekend, then that's maybe not helpful to getting your PB. But if you tell yourself, actually, I'm willing to sacrifice those to do it, then you are. If you're not, then you turn around and say, actually, I'm just going to adjust my goals on where we are. Because if we look at the good for age places in the over 40s, that's where we're seeing your good for age times to get national places. They're just tumbling down at the moment, because you're seeing some crazy times that people age of 40 are running now, because they can just put the time and dedication into that training. But it's also maybe sit there and ask yourself, why am I doing this? Why am I out running? And when we sit and ask most patients that, isn't for a PB, it's because mental health, because it's enjoyable, it's a bit of fresh air. So always just try and rekindle why you'd started doing it in the first place.
It's not all about PBs, but also no. I've noticed at parkrun they do your sort of your good for age percentage each time, so that's really interesting as well. So say you're not getting your parkrun PB, but you've got like an 85% good for age thing, then you can be pleased with that instead. There's a different side to it as you get older, I've seen.
Yeah. And then tip number five, I would say, is looking at joining a club, or with that is, don't be afraid of getting help. So if you've got an injury, get it sorted sooner rather than later. If you want to get more structure, join a running club or get a coach. If you need help with your diet, speak to a dietitian or a nutritional expert. So it is don't leave things lingering, because it's a general rule of thumb. The sooner you can get on top of something, the quicker it is to settle. Especially when we talk about injuries, the majority of the time, as soon as you get something sorted, the quicker you can get back to what you're doing. The longer you're leaving it sat there niggling away and stopping you doing what you want, the longer it's going to take you to recover. Because unfortunately, is if we look at our body's ability to do activity and strength and activity, as a ratio, we lose it four times as quick as we gain it. So having a month off can tend to take you sometimes a considerable amount of time to get back to doing it. But the one thing the body is very good at is remembering what you've done before. Mm-hmm. So if you manage to get some really good, consistent, solid training in before, and then you got injured, you'll mostly find you'll get back quicker, because your body think, well, actually, I remember doing this a few months ago. Yeah, this is fine. I'm happy. So then that all then links back to the beginning of doing your strength work and the consistency side of things.
Yeah, be consistent. Yeah. And as you get older, are there any sort of, like, do you have to take, you talked about nutrition just briefly there, like go and see a nutritionist, but are there any things that we should take, like, what's that, glucosamine sulfate, things like that, any supplements that will help us?
So obviously, but I'm not, nutritional expert isn't, I'm not a nutritionist or have any training in it, but if we look at, from when I'm reading the evidence out there, unfortunately, things like cod liver oil and glucosamine, there is no current evidence out there to say it is going to give you any benefit. Some people find they have a benefit. If it's doing no harm, I've got no issue with people taking it, as long as it's not going to cause them a risk of any harm. But when you talk about arthritis and glucosamine, the scientific evidence currently as it stands today doesn't say it's going to give you any benefit of doing it. It also says most likely not to do any harm, but it's not going to do you any.
Yeah. So maybe it'll have a placebo effect, which is a useful effect.
Maybe. Yeah, it is. At the end of the day, it's, as I explained to all our patients, is patients and runners, you don't really care about the studies that N equals 30,000. All you care about is N equals one, i.e. you.
Yeah.
And when I have someone with me an injury, you don't really care what the research says. You only care, okay, that's fine, but how are you going to help me get back to my running? And I said, that's my job, is to then take all the research and translate it back to that individual and build a plan that is tailored for them. The issue is that we're all a bunch of individuals. So what works for your best friend doesn't mean it's going to work for you. So it's all about just building something that is tailored to you as an individual and encompasses all your needs. Because I think the biggest mistake we can make in healthcare is if you come and you've got knee arthritis or you've got foot arthritis or you've got a problem, it's very easy just to look at that area, just look at the knee. What you need to just take a step back is, yes, look at the knee, but also get to know the person attached to the knee, a way wider here. What are their motivation to get back to it? What are their barriers to overcoming things, previous injuries? Because then once you can do that, you can then start building a plan that's unique to that individual. And it's the same with planning your running as well. It's like, and with if we take my personal running and hockey and sport and lifting weights, I have to do normally the majority of my strength sessions on a Friday and then play hockey on a Saturday. From a textbook view, that is not ideal whatsoever. But realistically, that's the only way in my time, in my diary, it can work. So you've got what the textbook says, and then you then got reality.
Yeah, and, exactly. You've got to do what because fits you.
Yeah, and because I've been doing it for so long, I can lift, I can squat nearly double body weight before a hockey match, and my legs are fine because I've been doing it for months and months. So my body's like, this is now normal for me.
Yeah.
So when I trained for a half marathon recently, I had a hockey match the day before my half marathon. Again, not ideal at all. It meant to take a rest day, whereas I went and ran around a hockey pitch for 70 minutes. So a lot of my training is, I done a longish speed followed by a long slow run the next day, because that's what worked for me. I had to do that. That was the scenario I was dealt with. So it's also being comfortable that you may not always follow the textbook.
Yeah.
It is okay. It's okay to break the mold.
Yeah. So as long as you're consistent and listen to your own body. And I thought, I thought it was interesting as well, just going back to the substance that we were talking about, and the, because I was telling you that this show is sponsored by Caran's, the New Zealand black currant extract. And you said, oh, I've got some of them in the cupboard. So do you mind just giving us a little bit of your experiences of this? It's basically, it's black currant extract, and it's really high in anthocyanins, which can help with DOMS and immunity as well.
Yeah, so purely from, this is Nick as a runner view, not Nick as a podiatrist view. I had some, and I use it for a triathlon, and I was suffering with some cramps from getting off the bike and going to the run. Someone said to me, oh, try these berry extracts. And I tried them and I didn't get any cramps on the day. And I felt completely fine afterwards. So, yeah, for me, it was a very, very positive, it was a positive experience for using them for that event.
Yeah, and we were both talking about how if we had to pay for them, we'd stopped using them because they are quite expensive. So yes, I've managed to wrangle a 40% off deal,
which is very good.
Yeah, if you click top right above Nick's head now, then you can access that deal. But yeah, it'll just give you enough to get you hooked, I think. And then you've got to pay full whack, unfortunately. But yeah, I found them really, really good for making me have more energy. So I'm now scared to not take them anymore, but that's another story, and I'll keep everybody posted with how I'm doing with them. But thank you for your experience there on them as well, Nick.
That's okay. No worries.
And just before we end the broadcast, we've got another like 5 minutes or so, but I just wondered if you knew anything or had any experiences with the research around the menopause. I know this is not your specialist area, and I will be chatting to somebody in the new year about somebody who's a real expert in menopause for any women that are going through this process. But is there anything that I know that plus 40 plus, I'm not really there yet, but some people are experiencing perimenopause and even menopause at this age. Is there anything, any advice that you'd give out for people in that situation and being a runner?
So the biggest one, I think, that the Davina McCall documentary has really helped put it in the limelight, because it is something that half the world's population have the capability to go through.
Yeah.
And it's something that actually we don't speak about that much. And it is something that we see a lot of with females in clinic who are going through it, who are picking up tendon injuries and niggles and generally just feeling a little more achy and tired. So it's sort of like you haven't got to suffer. There's no reason why you should suffer. Is go in. There's more and more information out there, and now, so go to your GP. There's a fantastic doctor in London who specialises in sort of hormones of the human body and athletes. Dr. Nikki, I've forgotten her surname off the top of my head. I'll send you a link to her book that's actually really good, that explains about the effects of hormones. And again, that's just not women, it's men as well. But it is like, it is just accepting that sometimes if you feel tired, you can't do your exercises or you can't do your run or you forget, don't stress about it. Don't worry about it. Don't beat yourself up. And yes, there are links between getting tendinopathies and aches and pains and the menopause that we're finding more and more in clinic now. But there's also a thing of, well, this is why it's more important then to keep up with the strength work and keep up with being consistent. But it's like, if you're having a bad day, and then don't stress about it. Don't worry about it. You can't change it. So in my head, it's like, if you can't change something, then try not to worry about it, because it's out of your control, because worrying about it's not going to do you any favours. But it is trying to keep as active as you can, but just listen to your body, really.
Mm. Okay, so the main takeaway that I have for anybody getting older, which we all are, is to do strength training, more and more strength training. That's the main takeaway that I have here. And check your shoes as well, and hook up with friends, and reevaluate why you run, and see somebody quickly about any niggles that you've got.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, we've just summed it up nicely there then. Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you very much, Nick. That's been a really informative chat, and I'm gonna I did my physio exercises this morning, so I might just add a bit of more strength training in today, and I think I might like join a gym so that I can go somewhere and see other people whilst I do some strength training. I think I'm going to put a little strength training program together for myself and see how that goes, but I hope that's been helpful for everybody. And yeah, we're all ever moving towards, you know, 40. If you're not 40 yet, then then congratulations on being young. But yeah, the strength thing is really interesting. And if you want to know Nick's essential strength moves, we did do a chat, didn't we, about a month yes. ago about strength and running, strength training and running. So I will link to that in the film description below as well. Yeah, was there anything else that you that we've not covered about getting old and running from your point of view, Nick?
So running, but it's the gym thing. So we're coming into the time of year now where gyms will see a massive influx of new people and then by February. So if you are going to join a gym, fabulous. But is always go back and ask yourself, okay, how am I going to maintain consistency with this? What's my objectives? Have a plan in place. If you have a plan, you're more likely to continue to see that through and not just cancel your membership 3 months later.
Yeah, I was planning to cancel it 3 months later anyway, because I'll be doing my ultras by then.
but that's
I'll
your
do
plan.
That winter thing, do the strength, and then I'll, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there's any gyms where you can just go once a week. They usually are like, oh, you have to pay per month, and it's usually really expensive, but I can look into it.
Oh, if you look at the likes of Pure Gym or something, I think they charge like 17 quid a month and it's a 30-day rolling contract or something along those lines.
Wow.
I think it's around that. That they changed their model during the pandemic to make it more flexible for people. And it is. So if you cancel it 3 months later, that's fine because that's your plan.
Yeah.
Your plan is
I plan to never go to the gym and cancel it.
The point I was trying to get at was your plan is to build strength up for this period and you're going to use the gym to help you to achieve your strength building goals.
Yes, because I just find that at home, I just don't really do it. Like I do my physio exercises now, but I just it's too hot as well. And then you have to open all the windows and the heating goes. And I'd like to go somewhere. I'd like to run to the gym, do a session and then walk home. That's what I would like to do, I think. So I'm going to look into that. That makes me excited.
As I said, if you can do it, it makes your life a lot easier because they've got all the equipment there.
Exactly.
You're not going to get distracted by emails, children, anything on those lines.
The washing. When I do press-ups on the carpet, we've got this rug, and I just spend about 10 minutes afterwards going, oh my goodness, there's loads of rubbish in this rug, and picking out bits of porridge, bits of fish finger, bits of seed from bread, and bits of pot. It's disgusting what's in that rug. So I just end up cleaning the house.
And it's also a bit of you time as well. It's a time to have to yourself and just clear your head as well, which I'm a big believer in as well.
Yeah, I like the idea of jogging somewhere, getting outside, going somewhere and then coming back out again. Yeah, okay, right, well, that's brilliant. I'll put all the links in the show notes below for everybody who is disciplined enough to do their workouts from home. And I do have to just finally do the final Karans thing. I have to say something at the start and the finish of the podcast. So it's sponsored by Karans. It's a blackcurrant extract from New Zealand, and I've been using it lately, and they've won that Sports Nutrition Product Champion Awards as well at the European Specialist Sports Nutrition Awards this year. I have been pleased with the effect it's had on my immunity. Steve gets every cold that Finley gets, and I haven't since I've started using these, so I didn't even realise that was a thing, but I did a live broadcast with them on Tuesday, and it turns out immunity is one of the things too. And also it reduced my DOMS after my last half marathon. So if you are interested to try it for yourself, then that I have got a 40% discount at the moment. So check the box just there above Nick's head for the 40% discount. And there's also a link in the film description below and the podcast show notes. So thank you very much for sponsoring the podcast and the live broadcast, Karans. Cool. Thank you for sitting there looking pretty whilst I did the final bit, Nick. And hopefully we're going to catch up with you soon, aren't we? Because we're going to talk about plantar fasciitis on an unconfirmed date yet in the new year. So anybody who's suffering from plantar fasciitis. Nick
and tomorrow we launch, I think it's the first plantar fasciitis course aimed for the general public.
Cool,
takes people, it'll take you about 2 to 2.5 hours to do in total, but you can do it in 5-minute chunks of time, and it talks you through about what plantar fasciitis is, why you may have it, things you can do, when is it not plantar fasciitis, different treatments, and then how to reduce the risk of it coming back all on a platform that you can log and track your progress. Oh. It's taking me about 50 hours to design and make it all.
Wow, that's amazing. So, yeah. And how much is it to sign up to that course then?
Oh, it's really, really, really expensive. It's a grand price of nothing.
Oh, free. It's free?
Yeah.
Wow, oh, okay. I thought it was going to be like £5 or something like that.
No.
Oh, okay. No. Right. Well, that's brilliant that that's opening soon. And we will come back in January or February and chat about that one. And you can tell us loads more about it. Sounds brilliant.
Perfect.
Cool. Okay. Thanks very much, Nick. And we'll see you in the new year.
No, thanks for having me.
Bye, everyone.
Yes, sir. Bye.
An important message from Blue Ridge Hospice. There may be several hospices now claiming to serve the area, but Blue Ridge Hospice is the only local hospice that has been serving here for 40 plus years, operates the only hospice inpatient care center, conducts the only community-wide grief and bereavement programs, offers a nationally recognized music therapy program in conjunction with Shenandoah University, outscores every other Virginia hospice in Medicare's quality scores, and so much more. Blue Ridge Hospice, the first, the best. Find out more at BlueRidgeHospice.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.